Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight myself and Jay are going to go over the last couple of weeks at Motherwell Football Club. There's been some new signings. We've got Saturday's game against Ross County to look back on. And we've got to preview the Hamilton Accies game on Saturday at Fir Park. Welcome along, mate.
Cheers.
Well, Saturday, I made the trip. Jay was just on the back of a trip to Malta, so missed out. It was certainly an improvement in the Dundee game. More action, a bit more urgency, a bit more tempo to our game, but still believe there's something missing. Just a wee bit of attacking fluidity, I suppose. The departure of Marvin Johnson certainly didn't help, but I don't think he contributed a great deal in his last couple of matches for the club. Louis Moult's return, a massive positive. He got on the score sheet, scoring from the penalty spot a couple of minutes after coming on. It was a very promising return, and hopefully he'll return to the starting 11 come Saturday. Jay, it's one of these games. We're going to talk about it in a bit more detail in a minute, but County go down to 10 men, but we were a goal down as well. We've managed to get back into it and get a point from Dingwall, a hard place to go notoriously. We've got to be fairly satisfied by that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I kind of look at games like that the same way as perhaps we looked at the Dundee game a couple of weeks ago. When we were talking before then, we said about how a home tie against a team like Dundee, who you would probably put in the same category as ourselves, you know, a team that may end up bottom six but has probably got aspirations for top six if they can, you know, put some decent runs together. I think Ross County are probably along the same sort of lines, and that's the kind of team that at home you look to beat, but away from home you should be quite happy if you can get a point. It's a very difficult place to go. You know, in recent times we've had some doings up there, so yeah, it's one of those ones where, you know, if you're a pessimist or if you go in and you're just looking for a moan or something, you might pick out the fact they've been down to 10 men or things like that and say that perhaps we should have went on and won it. But I think by anybody's standards, I think to go to Dingwall and get a point has to be seen as a good result. But it's one of those ones where it's only a good result if we then win our home games against the likes of Accies on Saturday.
A small band of travelling supporters on Saturday, but the mood was certainly lifted when Moult came off the bench. To grab a goal in his first game back, it'll be a huge confidence boost for him and just for the team and the fans in general. It could be the lift that we all require. We're going into the Accies game in the back of what I can only be describing as a poor run of form, I suppose. Two defeats and then two draws, so 2 points from 12 in the last four games. Moult could be a difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of player he is. There's a reason why just about every Motherwell fan loves him. And it's not just because, you know, when you hear him speaking on the podcast or the radio, you know, he is a genuinely likeable guy. It's because he's pretty much the ideal player for a team like Motherwell. He's got good ability, he's got pace, he scores goals, but he also works his arse off. He runs and runs and runs. His movement is fantastic. And he's the type of player that we don't have. He's actually quite a rare type of player for any team. And we don't have another Louis Moult. So when Louis Moult misses out for a number of weeks, you notice that. Now, that's not to say guys like Scott McDonald aren't top-class strikers. I mean, Scott McDonald is a very, very good player. But he's not a Louis Moult. And I think we've completely missed Louis Moult in the last few weeks. You know, again, I mentioned the Dundee game at Fir Park. That 0-0, I think we were absolutely crying out for Louis Moult in that game. That was the kind of game that I think Moult would have caused them a lot of problems. So it's clear, he's the kind of player that when you don't have him, it is glaringly obvious. Again, you know, you're saying there was a bit of a lift at the game itself. I can only imagine there would be. And yeah, if we can get him back to the fitness, or his prime fitness, and back to the form that he was showing last season, then it'll be a fantastic addition. And you know, we're at the stage of the season where we're talking about, you know, the new guys, Bellich and Bowman, and transfer dealings and things. I think Louis Moult has that kind of effect that when he comes back into the team, it will have the sort of excitement and anticipation of a new signing, because he brings that excitement, he brings that energy, he brings that just sheer effort. And a Motherwell side with Louis Moult in it is considerably better than a Motherwell side without.
I know it's early days in terms of Moult's comeback, but he misses the start of the season. You suddenly begin to worry a wee bit, I suppose, that his form did tail off a bit towards the back end of last season. So there was a wee bit in the back of my mind, will he be the same player when he comes back from surgery? But he certainly looked to be the same player, so keen his determination. He could have went on and grabbed another goal. What certainly wasn't for the want of trying. I'm quite excited what he'll bring to the squad. The other interesting thing that you mentioned there was Scott McDonald, who maybe slightly unfairly has been singled out for a wee bit of criticism, whether it be for his attitude or maybe he has just struggled because his strike partner, a player that he possibly was responsible for bringing on a great deal last season, hasn't been alongside him in the team.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is true. I think you're completely right in terms of McDonald having a big role to play in how good a player Moult was last season, and perhaps how he has developed as a player. Because it is easy to forget that you know, he is still a relatively young player in the grand scheme of things. But Scott McDonald himself is one of those types of players that is going to get moaned at if things are perceived not to go his way. You get players like that. You know, Michael Higden was a fantastic striker for Motherwell, fantastic goal scorer, and yet because he was quite, you know, immobile, didn't do a lot of running, then as soon as anything didn't go his way, or he was lazy, he was fat, he was this, he was that. Or Scott McDonald, it's not so much the, you know, immobility or anything like that, it's just the fact that he moans quite a lot. So he's always moaning at the players around him, he's always moaning at the referee. So, you know, a couple of times at a game, if things don't go his way, then fans start to get on his back because they perceive him as moaning at other people when he should be moaning at himself. So he's just one of those players that has, you know, perhaps a few negative attributes that mean that he's perhaps picked out a little bit quicker than other players. You know, it's just one of those things. But he's experienced enough and he's good enough that I don't think it will be. If there's any player on the planet that isn't going to take any notice of people moaning at them, it's Scott McDonald, and it's usually because he's too busy moaning at everybody else. I think for me, the interesting thing will be how we accommodate Moult back into the team. Obviously, I don't know. I wasn't there. I know who came off and things like that. I don't know how we really shaped up on Saturday. You can obviously clarify that. Obviously, I listened to Scott Mullen and Graham Barnstable, both of whom have, of course, been guests in the podcast in the past, commenting on the game on Saturday, and they actually said about quite a few times during the game that they couldn't really work out where the likes of Bowman was meant to be playing and things like that. So there still seems to be a bit of clarity needed and a bit of organisation needed in terms of how we line up in these games going forward. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, where Moult fits into that, because we're now in a situation where you're looking at Bowman's obviously just been signed. Bellich seems like a forward player. Ainsworth, you know, obviously still remains at the club. Cadden, although he's not a striker, is an attacking player. McDonald's there. I know Blythe seems to be out of favour, but whenever he's spoken about, it does seem to be emphasis on an injury, so he may come into contention at some point. And then, of course, you've got Louis Moult. So, just with the return of Louis Moult, not only are you getting a player that gets excitement and gets anticipation and gets the fans on their feet, but it also gives us, you know, quality options up front.
Well, that's it. We'll talk about the transfer window as we go along, but a few weeks ago, we sat and we discussed the fact that we felt we were a wee bit light in attacking options, particularly if Johnson left. Now we're rhyming off 6, 7, 8 attacking players, all of which, or all of whom, will consider themselves as contenders for Mark McGee's starting 11. So that's a nice situation to be in. And I've alluded to the kind of lack of form in the league so far this season as well. So if there's guys not on their game, we've got plenty in reserve to swap it around. And another interesting point of Saturday was that James McFadden came off the bench in the closing stages rather than Dom Thomas. So there's another one, or another two players that are contenders as well for the first team. It's certainly a squad with a fair bit of depth in it.
Well, I think, I mean, as much as, you know, folks' opinions will differ on Mark McGee personality-wise, I think if you think back to Mark McGee when he was his first spell at the club, that kind of attacking football was what it was all about. It was, you know, you were going out and absolutely blitzing teams like Dundee United in the first half, in the first 10 minutes, a couple of goals ahead, just taking the game to them. So I think what you're seeing is Mark McGee assembling what is essentially a Mark McGee Motherwell squad, you know, fast attacking players that can hopefully, you know, perhaps just ensure that we score more goals than they do rather than anything else. So, yeah, definitely. There's obviously depth to the squad now. I'm always a bit cynical or whatever when it comes to too much depth. I think, you know, you still have to have one eye on the younger players. And I think the kind of the chat about is possibly signing Lucas, even though we've already added Clay and obviously Bellich, etc. You know, it has me a little concerned that we're continuing to put as many players in between the first team and the under-20s as possible. But depth can only be a good thing. You know, we've had our issues with, you know, certain players have had issues with injury last season and obviously at the start of this season. So it's obviously good to be in a position that, you know, if that happens again, you know, if McDonald picks up a knock or Ainsworth or Cadden, then, you know, obviously having these options is vital. So that's obviously great.
There was a bit of backlash and a bit of conversation in the pub after the game that Faddy came on instead of Dom Thomas. For me, I think it's exactly the same as the sub we made against Dundee. You're just hoping that McFadden can bring that bit of class and something that Dom hasn't been able to produce when he's been given his opportunity in the first team. So it made sense for me, despite the fact that in terms of fitness, Faddy isn't quite there just now, and I don't know whether it'll come or whether it will be the case that he drops more into the background and into his role as assistant manager. But it was a bit of hard watch at times because he did seem very off the pace. But again, you've possibly got to just give him time there.
Well, I think the thing about McFadden is that, you know, because he's got this great history and this great career behind him, and because we know how good he was, not just in his first spell, but, you know, when he came back, he was fantastic, you know, when he first rejoined the team. So because we all know that, I think that at times there can be a little bit more expectation than really due. I mean, obviously I wasn't there, so I'm only talking from, you know, what I've heard and things like that, but, you know, the idea that a player comes off the bench and looks a yard off the pace can happen to any footballer. That happens. It's happened on a few occasions with the likes of Dom Thomas. It's happened with Lionel Ainsworth. It's happened with lots of players. And I think that there is a tendency to kind of jump to the conclusion that, all right, that's James McFadden finished, because he comes off the bench and isn't up to the pace. You know, that happens. McGee obviously sees something in him that he can change the game. He's obviously getting, you know, the odd game with under-20s. I wasn't against him coming on, as much as I agree that I would prefer to see the younger players getting a game. I wasn't against him coming on against Dundee, for example, because I think that was the kind of game that needed just a little bit of vision, a little bit of creativity, and perhaps McFadden was the person to do it. But, you know, if you're, again, wasn't at the game, but if your options are between Dom Thomas and James McFadden, perhaps James McFadden has just done more in recent weeks to justify a start, an appearance for the bench, because, you know, as we say every time Dom Thomas's name gets called up, or gets brought up, it's not, you know, no, I don't think every time they go, I think, you know, considering when we did the kind of the player of the year in the first year and gave it to Dom Thomas, I think we all really, really, really want to see Dom Thomas make it as a player, because I think we all see that there's potential there, but it just seems as time goes on, chances are missed, particularly that start against East Stirling. I thought that was the kind of game that Dom Thomas should have been going out and making a man of the match performance, and instead was just really, really quiet. And I think that as time goes on, and when you're going to Dingwall and you're needing somebody to perhaps inject some excitement into the team, when you're bringing on James McFadden, your assistant manager, rather than Dom Thomas, I think it's time to perhaps focus more on the fact that perhaps Dom Thomas's time at Motherwell's finished rather than James McFadden's.
I guess we can be accused of being slightly hypocritical as well, that, and I think that the majority of the fans in attendance are possibly in the same boat, though, that you want to see youth given a chance, but at the same time, when it came down to the nitty-gritty and you're looking for these 3 points, when you compare the two guys on the bench, it just seemed like the better option at the time, and I can completely understand why Mark McGee chose the option of bringing McFadden on. Yes, it didn't work out completely as desired, but it has been a situation that's hampered Thomas over his career at Motherwell, that he's getting 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there. It's not really a great deal of time either, is it, to turn a game in its head?
Well, no, absolutely not. That's it. I mean, I think that, it's hard not to draw parallels between Dom Thomas and the likes of Bob McHugh. Not that they're some similar players, but just the fact that Bob McHugh, you know, would he have made it as a Motherwell striker? Perhaps not. But he was never really given, you know, a genuine run of games. It was always, you know, off the bench here and there, you know, 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there. And you get the same sort of feeling for Dom Thomas. And I think it's nearing the stage now where a decision has to be made. If he is going to remain here and there is still the belief that he's going to go on and have a career at Motherwell, then I think it's time to put him out on loan. We're just talking about the depth and squad that we've got. You know, guys like Bellich are going to come into the team. Ainsworth's away, but you've got Bowman who can perhaps play wide. We've just spent, you know, a couple of minutes talking about the attacking players we've got, including James McFadden, who is now coming off the bench ahead of Dom Thomas. So I think that, yes, I agree that you can't be too harsh on a player that doesn't get given a run of games to show what he can do. But of course, on the flip side, it's not just about what you do in 10 minutes on a Saturday against, you know, Dundee or Hamilton Accies. It's about what you do in training every day. It's about what you do for the under-20s. And if the management don't think that he's done enough, then that's fair enough. But I think it's time for perhaps Dom to go down, drop down a division or two, play week in, week out, and then see if where we are perhaps at the turn of the year. Because at the moment, I can't see him getting in the team, and his appearances are going to just remain these kind of cameos for the bench, which I can't really see benefiting anybody.
That takes us on nicely to the transfer window, and while there was only two new arrivals on deadline day, one departure, I think there is quite a lot of question marks over players' futures that didn't go out on loan or weren't moved on, because you look at the squad and there's a few names stand out, and we'll focus on them first. The first one being Kieran Kennedy, Jay, who, after a fairly promising first season, it must be said, seems to have struggled with injuries. He's recently had an illness as well. I was quite surprised to see Louis Lang move on to Notts County and loan with the option of moving there permanently while Kennedy remained at the club, particularly given that he was struggling for fitness. You would have thought that you would have kept him on as a backup at least. Lang, we're no clearer on what's happening just now. Another under-20s game tonight. He wasn't in the squad for that game. So, a big question mark over his future at the club.
Again, I think for me, Lang and Kennedy, for the most part, have been very similar in terms of where they fit in at Fir Park and their futures at the club. I think they're both kind of in the mould of decent enough centre half, so due to inexperience and you know, being young players, are prone to a clanger now and again. Both have been played at full back. So I think when we brought in Hennigan, I presumed that one of Lang or Kennedy would move on. That has of course happened. I'm not sure whether there's any great reasoning about it. It might just simply have been that Lang was the one that was wanted by another club, and so he was, you know, obviously moved out on loan. It could be that, I know that there was some talk about Lang's mentality, perhaps. You know, I know there was chat about how he at one point was considering just chucking football and things like that, so perhaps that's came into it. I really don't know. It's speculation, but I was expecting one of the two to move on, so I'm not surprised that one did. In terms of Kennedy's future at Fir Park, I mean, McGee obviously mentioned recently about his illness and about how, you know, he's lost so much weight and things like that. I mean, I happened to see him down at the gym shortly after that, and he's not quite emaciated or anything like that, but he did look a bit like a skinny hipster now with his beard, and he has lost a bit of weight. So, yeah, I mean, I don't have any reason to doubt that there is an illness that's caused him, you know, a few weeks out, and it might take him a few weeks to get the weight back up and to get back into the swing of things. I don't actually know who I prefer out of Lang and Kennedy. I don't know about yourself, but I think, again, as I said, I think they're both much of a muchness. I think you'll get one fan might favour Lang, one fan might favour Kennedy. I'm happy with Kennedy's backup once he gets fit. I don't see any reason to think that he's not backup. I think that the illness is legit. Lang's obviously been moved on, because I think having Lang and Kennedy here would be a bit too much. So I don't really see. Yes, we may not be too further forward in terms of the clarity of the whole situation, but I don't see any reason to be too concerned about it. I think that in all likelihood, Kieran Kennedy will return to fitness and will be perhaps backup for Hennigan and McManus.
Yeah, I would agree that they are both very similar in terms of ability. I think that Kennedy is possibly a more imposing ball-winning centre-half, where when he's on the ball, though, I do panic a bit. I prefer just to see him clear his lines and trying to dribble or do anything overly intelligent with it. But I think that's what you get with a young centre-half at this level, particularly when he's perhaps not regarded as a nailed-on first-team starter. You're going to get someone that's quite raw and not the finished article. I think there's plenty of room for development with Kennedy. I think what we'll need to do is try and get a hold of him and get a few Lecky burgers in him over the next couple of weeks, and then we'll maybe square him up that way. But another one that there's a question mark over, and it's come very quickly after his arrival at the club, is Jacob Blythe, who, after featuring on the bench and then picking up an injury, completely dropped out for the Dundee game. We assumed he was injured. The same again on Saturday. He wasn't considered ready for a return to action. A very disappointing start for him in terms of these wee niggles. And while he has been suffering these injuries, guys like Ryan Bowman have come in. Louis Moult's now back to fitness. Scott McDonald's there. James McFadden can play as a striker. He seems to be very far down the pecking order. You've still got the situation with Craig Moore's out and loan at Ayr United as well. I said it in the last podcast, I'm struggling to see a way that Jacob Blythe will get an opportunity in this team, and it must be hugely frustrating for him. But there's been some strange comments about his mindset, and I don't know whether it was just the manager being sarcastic or maybe just a throwaway comment, but he doesn't seem to be very close to the plans, and it's a signing even in its infancy that doesn't seem to have worked out quite as we planned.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know much about the situation. I know, obviously, the comments you're talking about. In terms of Blythe himself, I do kind of feel for him a little bit. He's been on the park so little that I can't even bring his face to mind. I can tell you what he looks like. And yet, there are Motherwell fans who have already decided he's a cart horse, which is just absolute nonsense. But obviously, in keeping with what you would expect from certain sections of our support. I think, you know, if we're talking about in depth, or this, you know, the squad strength in depth, then I think there's an argument to be made that at least it offers you something different. I mean, I've not obviously seen Ryan Bowman up at Dingwall. I'm not sure physically what kind of player he is, whereas Blythe seems to be quite a big imposing striker, which is obviously, for all the positives of McDonald and Moult, is something that they're not. So on that perhaps is something that he's got to get going for him. I'm not suggesting that we're suddenly going to turn into a long ball team and start launching the ball at him. But sometimes that's required. Sometimes you might have a game that, you know, you favour a big striker to bully some defenders, or it's late in the game and you just want to launch it up the park. So there may still be a role for him at Firth Park. It's hard to really, hard to tell. Now, I share your concerns in terms of, it does seem slightly strange that a player that we've signed, and, you know, from a decent pedigree, it's not, you know, a nobody, or I suppose nobody really knew of him, but he's not just came in, you know, off the street or anything like that. You know, he's came from a decent level. He must have something about him. And the fact that it does seem as though he's perhaps not in favour, again, just picking up in the comments that you've mentioned, it might be that he's injured and we're just reading things out of context or whatever. Time will tell. But if it does transpire that we've signed a player who has almost immediately went out of favour and is no longer in the plans, then that's the kind of thing that Ian Barraquhar get absolutely crucified for. You know, guys that he signed and then suddenly replaced, or getting Nathan Thomas and guys like that, you know, guys that he went out, went right, I want him, signed him, and then decided 2 weeks later that he wasn't good enough and he wasn't getting a game, and yet we were still paying his wages. So, you know, we need to keep, you know, fair's fair. If it turns out that that's the case, then, you know, McGee should have to answer for that, because presumably we're paying a wage. But I think time will tell. It's something that it's worth waiting out to see what happens, because there must be something there. He must have something about him. And I'm sure the guy, you know, the lad himself, won't be sitting thinking, oh, this is over before it started. I'm sure he will be determined to prove his worth and to get back in the team. And as I said, it might just be that there comes a game with 20 minutes to go, the rain's lashing down, the ball's not, you know, rolling particularly well on the grass, and we just decide to bring him on and launch the ball at him, and suddenly scores a couple of goals and puts himself right back in contention.
Yeah, that's it. I think that he could certainly be used as a player that would unsettle defences. You know, Tom, when he played against Rangers at Firth Park, his stature did seem to caused him a fair bit of concern. He didn't really manage to make much of an impact in the game, but his presence was certainly felt. So that's certainly a positive. I think we should maybe clarify the comments that were made. It was a press conference. I don't imagine it would have been before the St Johnstone game at Firth Park, or the week following that, the game at Ibrox, that he said that Blythe was... It must have been before the St Johnstone game, that Blythe was ready to go, basically, but he just needed his head to be fixed, which could have just been something to amuse the assembled press pack. But it's one when you're dealing with a guy that you don't know a great deal about, he's not had a chance to make an impact, that possibly was slightly careless from a manager of the experience that Mark McGee's got.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, ourselves, much like I would imagine anybody that listens to the podcast, you know, we're pretty much obsessed with Motherwell. It's pretty much what we talk about most of the time. So anything like that, any throwaway comment like that is going to get picked up by the likes of ourselves and analysed, and what does this mean, and you know, perhaps taken out of context. But I don't understand what kind of context it could possibly be in. It's perhaps the kind of comment that you could get away with talking about quite a well-known player who perhaps is, you know, well-known for being a bit, you know, a bit wacky or something like that. But the idea that a young guy that you've just signed, you know, it's a strange comment to make. Of course, it could apply to many things. It could just be that he was having trouble settling up here, or, you know, perhaps was a little bit nervous about coming into the team. I don't know. It could be anything. But it did certainly seem to be quite a strange comment. And it's the kind of comment that you'd imagine an experienced manager like Mark McGee would know that by saying something like that, that people would read things into it that perhaps might not be there.
We'll focus on the two new arrivals before we discuss the one player that did depart on deadline day. Luka Belic, joining from West Ham United on loan, gave a very positive interview to the club YouTube page. Didn't feature on Saturday, but could be the case that he's just not quite up to speed yet. And that's not really an issue with me, to be honest. He had only been in, I think, 3 or 4 days training prior to the Ross County game. And I gave it Dingwall as a fairly harsh introduction to Scottish football. Ryan Bowman came in from Gateshead, a player that clearly had caught our attention long before signing him on the final day of August or the first day of September. Saturday, probably not a game that we could particularly judge him on. As you said, that the MFC TV commentary, they couldn't really pinpoint where he was playing. I would tend to agree with that. He was drawn wide quite a lot. Not the most physical presence, but he did compete for balls in the air and tried to knock the ball on. As I say, his contribution, I can't really recall him contributing a great deal to attack or doing anything spectacular, but at the same time, it wasn't a game that was particularly spectacular itself. It was his debut. I've mentioned there that it's a hard place to go and a hard place to play. Scottish football renowned for its ridiculous pace. It will take a wee while to adjust. Louis Moult took a while to adjust. I'm more than happy for him to be a part of the squad and let's see what he's got in the coming weeks and months, I suppose, Jay.
Oh no, absolutely. I'm quite optimistic about both the signings. You know, Bowman, I wasn't there anyway, but I certainly wouldn't be judging him on one game. You know, Motherwell's kind of history is littered with players who, you know, took a little while to settle. You know, mentioned Michael Higden earlier, there's a prime example. Lukas Jukovic, you know, guys who have came in and taken a wee while to get going, and then once they've got going, there's been no looking back. I think Bowman is, you know, perhaps a perfect example of the kind of player we're looking to bring in. You know, he's the same level as Marvin Johnson and Louis Moult when they came in. He's obviously here to perhaps play a season or two, score some goals and get moved on at a higher level, which I'm perfectly happy with. In terms of Belic, I'm quite excited about that one. You know, 20 years old and yet West Ham have just, you know, got to sign a new contract. So he's obviously rated down there, serving under 19 international. You know, it's the kind of things that when you're reading the Wikipedia page and things like that, when you're doing your homework, that does, you know, catch your eye as a Motherwell fan, because obviously we're not going to be signing, you know, the best players around. So I'm quite happy with the business we've done in terms of these two guys. Slightly surprised with the Bowman one. I think it's came out of nowhere. I think even he said that at 5 o'clock his agent told him just to watch the telly with a cup of tea because he wasn't going anywhere, and yet he ended up at Far Park. But they're often the best ones, the ones that kind of just surprise you. And then obviously, you know, it goes without saying that after the McGee saying that he was actually at the 7-0 game at Celtic Park last year, the fact that he has still signed for us shows that he's obviously quite dedicated to the cause.
Aye, I was tempted not to come back after that game. I suppose another positive there is that he went and had a cup of tea and watched the telly rather than having a few pints, and then they still managed to actually make it and sign. But that does seem to be the policy, and the recruitment is based in the English lower leagues. You get the feeling that Mark McGee's maybe been presented with a couple of options and then sifting through them more than actually going out and kind of conducting his business in the more traditional way, shall we say, by scouting players, looking at them on a regular basis. The head of recruitment's going out. It's maybe a more modern way of capturing players, and it's a way that certainly has paid off for us in the past. And a perfect example of that would be Marvin Johnson, who eventually departed the club for an undisclosed fee. I think in the end, most fans were actually just quite relieved to see the end of what had become a wee bit of a saga. The days prior to him leaving, the agent and Motherwell kind of get embroiled in a wee bit of a war of words. The club released a very strong statement saying that it wouldn't be going anywhere unless the fee matched the expectations. We obviously don't know exactly what the fee was, but based on the comments from Alan Burrows, we did get a considerable amount. The add-on potential is also quite an exciting part of the deal. I think the kind of end feeling for myself, I don't know about yourself, keep on saying yourself here, was one of, thanks for the memories, Marvin, but I didn't lose very much sleep over him moving on. I thought his attitude in the last couple of games was quite disappointing, to be honest with you, but he clearly had his head turned, and it was time, and possibly the best move for both parties, that he did move on.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that 100%. Marvin Johnson is probably a really good example of the kind of player who probably has a highlights role aerial on YouTube that makes him look utterly world-class, because he's that kind of player. He can do things, he can glide past players, he can score great goals, he can put in a great delivery. But, you know, for the Motherwell fans who see him week in, week out, they know that he's incredibly inconsistent. He was obviously getting big plaudits for really good performances against the likes of Annan. And yet, since the season started, I think he's been very poor. Whether that's down to, you know, as you say, his head already being turned, I'm not sure, because I think there was worse spells the last season that he was very poor. So, yeah, I tend to agree. I think that we've lost our perhaps most sellable asset, but we've certainly not lost our most important player. I don't think it will be anywhere close to as big a loss as, you know, some may think, particularly in the media. I think, you know, it was always billed as though we were, you know, losing by far our best player. I don't agree with that. There are players I would have ahead of them in the queue that would be far more gutted if we'd lost. So to get, you know, whatever the figure is that we've got for him, presumably, you know, considering the statement the club came out with, it must be substantial. So I'm more than happy with that. That's not an issue. Yeah, perhaps there is the added factor that the agent was a bit of a dick near the end, and then obviously Marvin Johnson's been out and handed in a transfer request when everybody knew we were trying to sell him anyway. So that seemed to just, you know, be a wee bit childish or a wee bit, you know, unrequired. But overall, I tend to agree. Good enough player, enjoyed the memories that he's given us. Particularly, you know, his contribution to Cammy Bell's punch into the net. But certainly not the most important player at Fir Park by any means. I'm not going to lose any sleep whatsoever about Marvin Johnson moving on.
It's kind of funny how you kind of go sour in certain individuals, and I think that's listening to you talk there and kind of recounting the last couple of days at Fir Park. It was kind of like that for me. You just not even take a dislike, you just kind of would have preferred it hadn't happened, and it didn't really have to play out the way it did. Oxford United fans were, it was strange to have quite a few of them coming on and trying to kind of wind us up about how they'd taken our best player and that he was making a step up. I can't recall the last time I saw Oxford United playing the European competition or finishing in second place in Scotland's top flight, or their top flight. They're not going to finish second in Scotland's top flight, but I'm sure not one of them will have bothered listening after taking a few digs at us, but I would like to go on record and say that I don't actually think that Motherwell to Oxford is a massive step up, that's for sure. It will certainly be a step up in his financial well-being and his financial prosperity, but I certainly don't think as a footballing entity that Motherwell should be considering themselves a smaller club than Oxford United.
No, absolutely not. I mean, Oxford basically got a failure of a management team. I mean, that's how big a step up it is to Oxford. But no, in terms of turning sour or your feelings becoming negative towards a player, for me, and this is a good example of, I wouldn't say that my feelings to Marvin Johnson have soured at all. I think I've just went from having a genuine interest in how he develops to complete indifference. I think that's where the change for me is. I think there are players who have left Motherwell with all the best wishes in the world, and they've moved on. Everybody's been happy with it. They've conducted themselves well, and then they've looked down, and you've kept an eye out to see how they're doing. I think a lot of us will still, obviously the most obvious examples are the likes of Jamie Murphy, etc. But a lot of us will still have a wee look to see how the likes of Humphreys doing and guys like that. But in terms of Marvin Johnson, I think, just those last couple of days, it's not made me feel any particular negativity towards him. It just has made me feel complete indifference towards him. So now that he's left, essentially that's him gone. And I can't imagine I'll be really keeping tabs on his career from now on.
Speaking of feelings of indifference, on Saturday, Hamilton Accies visit Fir Park. And this is a big one. You think about that opening day victory at Rugby Park, the usual high expectations set in, and I really thought we would have accumulated more than 2 points in the next 4 games following that, but we're at where we're at, and we're going into a run of fixtures that we should be considering taking, 6 from 9. You look at the next 3, it's Accies at home, Thistle away, and then Hearts, who have made an impressive start to the season, but certainly on our own turf, I've always believed that we can be more than a match for anyone. So a big run of fixtures, starting with the team probably favourites for relegation. They always seem to be able to turn in a result now and again, but their start to the season has been pretty much to form, Jay, and we need to be taking advantage of that and claiming our first 3 points at Fir Park this season when they visit on Saturday.
Yeah, my feelings on the game on Saturday are much like the way I felt before the Dundee game. It's a team that we're playing at home, we're playing at Fir Park, and therefore if we have any aspirations whatsoever of pushing for a top six place, then it's a game we have to win. At the end of the day, yes, Accies may or may not be favourites for relegation, or may not be in a relegation battle this season. It's really difficult to tell, I suppose, this early on the season, because Thistle are obviously bottom down there. Cali haven't particularly started well. There's still question marks over Kilmarnock. So there's still a lot of sorting out to do in terms of where the teams are going to be battling out later on the season. But these are the kind of games that you get to set that. You really get to push on in these fixtures and cement that kind of general area that you hope to be about for the rest of the season. And I think if we're going to go into these games at home against the likes of Dundee and Hamilton Accies and not take maximum points, then we're really going to struggle to aspire for much more than maybe 8th, 9th, 10th as the season goes on. It's not been fantastic the last few games, but in saying that, we're 3 points off of third, so we're still early enough that it just takes a wee run of games and we can really kind of push on. But as I said, these are the kind of fixtures you need to win. The nature of a league is that home games against the teams that you need to be beaten don't come along all too often. And so when they do come along, you need to go into them and you need to take maximum points, and it is one of those games. I don't I'm not particularly bothered about it as a Lanarkshire derby. I'm one of those who actually tends to quite like, you know, Abenakis as much as they hate us. I don't really have any particular ill feeling or passion about the actual derby itself. When I was brought up as a Mull fan, it was always Airdrie that were the, you know, the opponents. So there's no bad, there's no sort of extra feelings that way. It's just a game that I think that, you know, we really need to be looking to win. And, you know, hopefully the likes of Malt being back and stuff like that will inject that sort of feel-good factor and that momentum. But 3 points for me is necessary on Saturday, because if we're going to, you know, draw at home at Dundee and you know, not pick up maximum points against Accies, then we are going to struggle to really push on for top six as the season continues.
I suppose a positive factor is that we've played two teams that will also have top six aspirations in Dundee and in Ross County, and we've been more than a match for them. I would say over the 90 minutes on Saturday we're the better side. We're the better side against Dundee. Maybe it's just a wee change of luck and finding that spark that I talked about earlier on in the podcast, that can turn things in its head for us. And Louis Mull, for me, is absolutely the man to do that. I must also point out from Saturday's game that almost everything good that Motherwell did on Saturday came through Chris Cadden, who, again, was utterly brilliant. He's just come on and come on and come on. It's just, it's been a delight to watch. He claimed the player of the month for last month, and albeit that was only a month that brought one victory in the league, but he's playing a massive part in the team. Guys like Emma will be pivotal as well to success, you would have to think.
Oh yeah, as I said earlier, I think, you know, McGee's, if we're trying to replicate McGee's first spell at Fir Park, which I think we are, you know, he was obviously talking about, you know, that 4-3-3 and how we can now play it because Bowman can fit in there and stuff. I think he obviously, you know, has one eye on the way we played first time around. And if that's what we're looking to do, then guys like Chrissy Cadden and Louis Moult are going to be integral to that, because it is your quick, your hard working and your attacking players that make that happen. But yeah, like I think just about every Motherwell fan on the planet, I'm a massive Chrissy Cadden fan. I think he's fantastic. Ideal player. If he continues to develop the way he is, then he will be, you know, the best youth prospect that we've brought through since McFadden.
Yeah, can't disagree. Just a quick one in Aki's, who, as I say, he always seemed to, well, since the return, have managed to work very hard to establish himself as a regular Scottish Premiership side. Yes, they have battled at the bottom of the league, but they've always seemed to come out looking pretty well. Under Martin Canning, who's come under a bit of criticism, they've started this season fairly impressively as well. They got a draw at Ibrox, a draw at Dens, they've beaten Ross County. So they go into the game in the exact same amount of points as we have. It's always a tough game, and they do have good players, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, if you want to beat Alan Aki's, as much as we like to, you know, think of them as being this wee, you know, tiny sort of local neighbour, they do have players that can hurt us. You know, Ali Crawford, I really rate. I think he's a fantastic player. Dougie Emery is pretty much the Aki's talisman and always loves, you know, getting up Motherwell. So they have players that can hurt us. But that said, as good as Ali Crawford is, and as perhaps as consistent Dougie Emery is against Motherwell, I think man for man, we are the favourites. And if we get into the game, play our strengths, are organised, and yeah, get a wee bit of the rub of the green now and again, then I have no doubt whatsoever we'll take all 3 points.
Yeah, you look at the results over the last couple of seasons, we certainly owe them a few. Our form at home has been better than our form at New Douglas Park. That victory in March was greeted like we had won a cup final. It just felt like we had so many disappointments at that stadium. It was a massive relief to claim a victory, but we've got more than enough firepower, I would say, and I expect us to win, and I expect us to win well. If guys like Cadden and Moult turn it on, I think we should have far too much for them. Maybe a thumping is his ideas above our station, but I certainly think we should win with a bit to spare, and I expect us to do exactly that. Just before we wrap up, I'd like to take a couple of minutes to discuss a forthcoming bookazine. Before we get more stick about that name, I couldn't actually come up with anything better. Philip Speedy chinned me in the pub before the Ross County game on Saturday and said that it should be called a dossier, but unfortunately I've advertised it for 4 days as a bookazine, so that's exactly how it remains. What the aspirations behind this are to purchase a epilepsy alarm for my fiance's niece, who's only 4 years of age. It's a big project and one that is going to take us time and a hell of a lot of effort, but we've got some brilliant names already lined up for it, with plenty more to come as well. So if you can spare the £8 for the bookazine, then please go onto our website, mfcpodcast.co.uk, and get yourself one via pre-order. We'll only be making them up to order as well, so if you've not pre-ordered it, then unfortunately there won't be any excess stock. So please, if you can, support it. It would be much appreciated. Jay, thank you very much for your time this week. I'll let you get to bed because it's 12:30 at night.
Cheers, man.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday, and it will be the return of the King as well. Hopefully Buster will be back with us as well. Until then, thank you, goodbye.
He's gonna save the day.